seduced by our living service. The only enemy is my own heart, should I decide too late to challenge the very name for what is war. Rich spending, poor inside a game. It's not just the bullets, it's more than cannons in a field. It's the brutal fabric sewn by every crooked deal and the loose threads of justice. Pulled for this contest we are in, but what is life? If it takes them to die for us to win, are you listening? There is a prophet in our midst, he is the corpse. A dead hand cut into a fist, will you ignore the timeless story of the name of what war is and how it all turns out the same? And it's perpetuating aid in one more life. One more battle, one more grave, war without end. And if the willing and the brave and the deaths of millions have offered us no relief, then I take my life, place it on the side of peace.
Hello, and thanks for listening to great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just tuning into the program, we're listening to Energy Innovations with Amory B. Lovins and Edward Lucas, who discuss how bold solutions for the new energy era is akin to reinventing fire.
And these Best Buys are, of course, the also the most effective solutions to the big challenges that hazard every country's security and prosperity. So our little team is helping smart companies and governments get unstuck and speed this journey. There is, of course, also a lot of old thinking still around. Former oilman Maurice Strong once said, not all the fossils are in the fuel. But DuPont's former chairman, Edgar Willard, reminds us that companies hampered by old thinking won't be a problem because, he said, in the long run, they simply won't be around. What I've described here is not just a once-in-a-civilization business opportunity. It's one of the greatest transformations in the history of our species because we humans are really inventing a new fire, not dug from below, but flowing from above. I've even heard theologians describe this as a contrast between energy from hell and energy from heaven. And the new fire is quite different. It is not scarce, but bountiful, not transient, but permanent, not local, but everywhere. Not costly, but free. And but for the transitional tail of natural gas and a bit of biofuel grown in ways that sustain and endure, this new fire is flameless. Efficiently used, it really can make energy do our work without working our undoing. Now, each of you owns a piece of that prize, and our book, Reinventing Fire, details how you can capture that opportunity. I'm told it's available in India via Flipkart.com. So with the conversation that we've begun at reinventingfire.com, let me invite you to engage with us, with each other, with everybody across all of India to help make India and the world richer, fairer, cooler, and safer by together reinventing fire. Thank you.
Well, I love that. Richer, fairer, cooler, and safer. Who could object to that? We started a bit late because of the showbiz interlude that we had before this talk. But I'd be very happy to just take one question or two from the floor. And I see one right there in the front. And I've got one for you as well, which is with your sort of energy efficient expert eye, looking around this hotel, and you've been given the idea to retrofit it. Give us a brief answer of the sort of things that you might do and what sort of savings you'd expect.
Well, everything that's being done with incandescent lights can be done now better with LEDs, and you'd save in the vicinity of 85% to 90-odd%. It would look better and you'd see better, partly because I'd also combine it with better lighting design, in which you light surfaces, not volume. You don't just dump light into the space. I haven't had a look at the mechanical plant, but other large hotels in the region, typically we can at least triple the efficiency, and it gives better comfort and eliminates fan noise. I'm sure there's a lot to do with the hot water systems as well. That's a more complex bit, and some of the other equipment in the kitchens and so on. And I think if we have a chance to reglaze the building, if it ever needs reglazing, if the seals fail, that happens from time to time, let's put in super windows that are about perfect in letting in light without heat. If we do all that, normally in a building of this size and vintage, we would expect to save around 70% to 80% of the energy, and the economics should be stunning.
So it'd be a little bit cheaper to stay here then, or more profitable to run. Between I just take one question. Chris had his hand up first, so just a very quick question, Chris, and then a quick answer of memory.
Chris Choa from AECOM. That was a fabulous presentation. Thanks so
Thank
much.
You.
And the best part, of course, is that it's not one big thing. It's many, many incremental things.
Silver buckshot.
That add up to everything. So quick observation and then a question. The observation, of course, is that there are also paradoxes. The less expensive a resource is, the more you tend to consume it. The food is cheap, you eat more. Memory is cheaper, you use more of it. You have a lovely house in Colorado.
Your question?
And it's bigger. So the question is, how do you control the aspiration? How do you create the desire to consume less?
Okay. 1 minute on cultural change.
Well, you can do that if you want. Certainly, once we are past the level of the 300 million people here and about 1 billion worldwide who have no electricity and lack basics for a decent life, we then get to the stage most of us are at which it's obviously futile and stupid to try to meet non-material needs by material means. Every faith tradition warns us about that. It's called vanity. But that's not what I'm talking about. And the Jevons paradox you referred to turns out to be a real but a very small effect in the few percent range and usually not observable. It's often confused with the wealth effect. The reason more people in India buy air conditioners is that they're becoming able to afford them. They're getting richer, but they're not getting richer mainly because of energy efficiency. It is stimulative, but it's a very small effect. However, it does, of course, increase welfare to the extent that wealth is correlated with welfare. And therefore, we end up being better off using very much less energy. In the U.S., for example, half the energy we would have used if we were still as inefficient in making today's economy as we were in 75. So this paradox is widely misunderstood. It's rediscovered by some economist about every 10 years and used to create a lot of confusion, which then fades away after a while. I think the best example right now would be to look at Germany. Since 1990, their energy use went down 10%, their carbon emissions went down 23%, their economy grew 36%, their carbon productivity, the GDP per carbon atom burnt, went up about 76%, and they're only just getting started on efficiency.
Well, on that note, I'm so sorry, I see a forest of hands here. Maybe you'll be able to grab Dr. Lovins afterwards in the break, but I'm have instructions that you can't see, but I can, saying closed session.
And so I'm here for dinner tonight and lunch tomorrow.
And I recommend, again, do watch the TED Talks and read the book and follow the advice. And next time, please bring a banana as well as your wonderful carbon fiber souvenir. Now, please join me in thanking Emery Lovins very much indeed for his inspirational talk.
Thank you.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
We've got a situation, and it calls for a solution that upholds our domination of the planet. We're gonna make our case, and we're gonna make it well. And if you don't like our logic, you can can it. We'll use impeccable intelligence from any country in the world, as long as we all see eye to eye. And if we don't find quite what we need, we know what to do. Just look into the camera and lie. It's Operation Iraqi Liberation. Tell me, what does that spell? Operation Iraqi Liberation. O-I-L. We'll lie about the missiles and the nuclear research. We'll lie about uranium. We'll build military bases and smile for reporters as we give away bubble gum. We'll lie about Bin Laden, his connections with the Saudis. We'll lie about 9-1-1. We'll lie about the Baathists, their connections to Al-Qaeda, because we know there's none. It's Operation Iraqi Liberation. Tell me, what does that spell? Operation Iraqi Liberation. We'll lie about the North Koreans, and we'll lie about Iran, and don't mention Israel. Keep those nuclear weapons out of this song, and we'll all get together swell. And we'll liberate these people, we'll liberate their money, we'll liberate their soil. We'll liberate their airports, we'll liberate their harbors, and we'll liberate their oil. It's Operation Iraqi Liberation. Tell me, what does that spell? Operation Iraqi Liberation. O-I-L. Operation Iraqi Liberation. Tell me, what does that spell? Operation Iraqi Liberation.
Coming up next, does TV help make Americans passive and accepting of authority? Bruce E. Levine, a clinical psychologist and author, discusses how TV makes Americans passive. He talks with Scott Horton about the mental health issues and social isolation caused by watching TV and how the corporate state has essentially colonized Americans.
When a crisis rocks the system, you can see them come to patch up the holes now. They're always pushing policies that work out right for ruling class goals now. And if panic comes to Wall Street, you can hear them stress the need for controls now. But they'll be gone, gone, gone when the people take their power away. We're working out of Washington, they're drawing up a federal plan now. Then it's off to Santa Monica to spend some time consulting for Rand now. They tried to dream up ways to hide the rising cost of bombing Vietnam now. But they'll be gone, gone, gone when the people take their power away. They can't see the oppression because they spend their time just shooting the bull now. Speech on hunger, but they do it while their bellies are full now. And they say it's getting better, but it looks like they're just pulling the wool now. And
power away.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton, and our first guest on the show is Dr. Bruce E. Levine. He's got this piece at Alternet, reprinted at Salon.com. Does TV actually brainwash Americans? Of course, we all already know that already, but here is scientific evidence to confirm our bias with. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Good to be on, Scott.
I was just making fun of everyone for believing whatever they want and taking any fact, whether it actually confirms their bias or not, and using it as though it does anyway. In this case, if it rains, it's proof that there's global warming, and if it snows, then that's proof that there's not. And nobody really is interested in actual data. They all just want to be told that they're right. So a big part of being told that you're right all the time is TV. As Noam Chomsky put it, especially, you know, we talk about very important foreign policy and police state type topics on this show a lot, and Noam Chomsky calls just the essence of TV conversation in general the propaganda model. He says it's perfect for having conversations based on false but conceded premises, a very narrow debate within those parameters. And then we got to go to commercial, so I'm sorry, we just don't have time for you to bring up any facts that might undermine the point where we all started from. And it seems like that's probably a big part of what you're getting at here with how people are brainwashed by the TV. It's the big lie by omission. What is shown and what's not, and then what's the implication about what isn't important enough to make the TV today? That kind of thing.
Well, there's like multiple levels of why TV is not good for democracy, why it's zombifying, why it's pacifying, why it's brainwashing. And that's, you know, one of the things that I should kind of, just a little bit of backdrop, what I'm really interested in are all the different areas, major institutions of American life, culture, that are pacifying us, that are getting us not to, like, fight for democracy. And that was the subject, really, of that Get Up Stand Up book, my last book, which was really kind of taking a look at the different areas and what we can do about it. And one spoke in the wheel, of which there are many, including my own profession, which we could talk about some other time, the mental health profession, but there are several spokes in the wheel that are kind of pacifying us to not act on, to get up and stand up and act for democracy, and television is one of them. And the content of it is only one aspect of it. There are actually some more insidious aspects of it beyond the content of it.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about that, because I think I already just plagiarized Chomsky enough for everybody to get that point, so let's move on then. What is it about the TV? Because it's not the CRT, right? It's not the radiation getting your brain waves anymore, because now everybody's got LCD.
Well, what happens to you, I mean, a lot of progressives want to focus in on the fact that, you know, the programming is owned by, you know, six major corporations, General Electric, Walt Disney, all these, they own pretty much what everybody sees out there. So there's clearly certain problematic things having to do with the content. It creates fear-based, you know, kind of programming, gets people sort of scared, it's sort of insipid, and there's a lot of things about the programming itself, but probably the thing that's not talked about enough is just whatever you're viewing, regardless of the content, is going to kind of pacify you. And there's, for, you know, a generation now, there's just lots of studies that show no matter what kind of programming you're watching them, they've done it on adults, they've done it on kids, and they've asked them, you know, is this program stuff that you really like, that you find interesting, or you don't like? And their brainwaves are basically the same, sort of slow down in a kind of more zombified, hypnotized state, which is why, and this is not true across the board, but it's true for a lot of people, that they'll watch, say, for example, some really good television. For me, I consider a Bill Moyers interview. A lot of he's talking to these whistleblowers week after week, talking about people telling us, you know, how really America isn't a democracy. And these are excellent interviews. And lots of folks, including myself, the next day, all they can remember is that they saw a pretty good interview. They don't remember any of the content. As opposed to if you go online and you read a transcript of one of these interviews, you're far more likely, or listen to these things on radio. If you're listening on radio, reading transcripts, you're far more likely to remember certain content areas than if you're just kind of watching on TV. Then all you're going to generally remember is something is, oh, that was really good. I was sort of entertained. That was really interesting.
Right. That's what I always tell the audience on this show. You can't learn anything listening to the radio. The whole point of this show is to say, go read this thing that this guy wrote at Salon.com. That's where the learning is. You go, hey, you know what I learned on the radio today? There's a thing to read at Salon.com. That's the whole point of this, right? Antiwar.com/Porter. That's where the war party's lies are debunked. Go there.
Well, you're going to learn, actually, your brain is working a lot more when you're just sitting there listening to a radio. And you're going to incorporate more facts listening to people talk than watching television. There's a kind of hypnotic sort of zombifying process that happens to your brainwaves watching television that doesn't happen when you're listening to the radio. It doesn't happen when you're in a conversation with another human being. Certainly doesn't happen when you're reading. And that's a big, that's been an ongoing major problem of television, no matter how good it is, no matter how much quality it is, frontline documentaries, all of these kinds of things, if that's the only place that you're kind of getting your information, you're not going to remember a lot of stuff.
Right. And now, I think it's really interesting the way you talk about how TV in general is never about the content. Not just, the different effects that it has on you doesn't necessarily depend on the content, but actual just the programming of the TV in the first place, the putting together of these things to show everybody doesn't even really have anything to do with the content. What matters is what it looks like only.
Right, exactly. And that's what there's some fantastic books over the ages, on television. One of the books that I talk about a lot in that article is Jerry Mander, who was a former advertising guy who's sort of like a reformed sinner. He wrote this book way back in the 70s called Four Arguments for the Elimination of Television. And what he talks about is that really what these guys are caring about only, what good television is for them is anything that can hold your attention. And that's what they're caring about is these things called technical events, which means how many quick cuts and zoom-ins and rolls and animations and graphics, all of those kinds of things which are different than what the eye normally sees in natural life. And those are the kinds of things that are going to hold your attention because just biologically we have something called the orienting response. And there's a lot written about this in a Scientific American article a few years back, but basically what this orienting response is biologically is it's just our instinctive reaction to anything different, anything we haven't seen before, anything sudden, we're going to watch that. And that's what they're trying to do there on television all the time. That's all they really care about, is how they could use their programming, whatever it is. I mean, if they could figure out a way, they really wouldn't mind so much if someone convinced them that they could show like an Occupy scene from Occupy Wall Street or any of these things, and they could produce it in a way to hold your attention. They wouldn't care about whether it's left, too leftist. If they could figure out a way, because in their own head is, once we got your attention with the programming, then we shoved the advertising down you, which has even more of these orienting responses, and people can count them. If you want to do that sometimes, just count how many of these so-called technical events, how many of these cuts and zooms and rollouts, all of these things that you don't ordinarily see in real life, count how many happen in a kind of commercial. There's going to be a lot more in a commercial than there are going to be in a program, because the whole point of television is it's produced, it's made for advertising. That's the point. The point is to use these programs to get them interesting enough, to get you to watch, but have these advertisings more interesting in a technical sense of these technical events, so that you'll much more likely remember some product. That's all they care about, is that vaguely you'll walk away from your 5 hours worth of television a day, which is what most Americans are watching, about right around 5 hours a day, and that you're not going to remember much except their products. And then you're going to go to the supermarket and you're going to see them on the shelves and you're going to grab one off the shelf. That's the whole point of television.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about Neil Postman while I was reading your article in his book Technopoly, where he talks about how in America, he says America's what he defines as a technopoly, and that is a society where culture is completely surrendered to technology, where anything that can be invented will be invented, and once it's cheap enough, it will be deployed everywhere, and there's just no stopping it. And so that goes for, it's in the news now that they're starting the test runs, but within just a few years, every sheriff's department is going to have have a drone over every neighborhood, and we'll all be living like Fallujans. And there's just no stopping it, because remote-controlled planes are becoming that cheap. Remote-controlled helicopters are becoming that cheap. So if it can be done, it will be done, that kind of thing. But he also talks about how the technologies that we use, like even, for example, the way this radio show is put together, the way that you and I are connecting right now, determines to a great degree what anyone can get out of it. And so he says that opinion polls, for example, that's a technology for measuring what people think, right? But of course, it's like the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. It changes not just, you know, what people might answer if they'd come up with the idea to say something themselves rather than being asked, but also it changes even what it means to have an opinion. Are you for this or against it or whatever, rather than having an opinion, which used to be sort of like a river, an ongoing thing that you would always be in the act of opinioning. It was like a verb rather than a noun, that kind of thing. That has all changed just because of the technology that we use.
It's time once again for Radio's Theater of the Wine.
Again?
Today featuring the Shakespeare classic, Julius Caesar.
Oh, we just did Shakespeare!
And Julius Caesar. Oh, God, I hate wearing a toga.
Aw, Shakespeare's so boring.
Oh, yeah.
Can't we do a Neil Simon play?
Look, it's Shakespeare or nothing, all right?
What about Romeo and Juliet, then?
Oh, that's been done to death!
If all you're going to do is complain, just forget about it. Get off the stage.
But theater is my life!
I can't hold a real job. I've got a bad back.
Can I go now?
Go, all of you, go. This has been Radio's Theater of the Wine.
You know, it is so hot on this stage. Can we just turn out those big, bright lights?
Now that is not a problem.
Oh, now it's too dark.
Yes, it's a shame, isn't it? Radio's Theater of the Wine, a Sniveling Thespian production.
And now for something completely different.